Welcome to everyone who's assembled here this morning. Thank you for joining us online. As mentioned, my name is Grady, and I am one of the ministers here at Northeast, and we are glad that you're here. And I just thought this morning I'd show this video and then basically say, don't be like that, and then just sit down. Do I hear an amen? Amen. Well, I'm not going to do it, okay? How many of you have heard the expression, being a Karen? Raise your hand. I'm just curious. Now, probably three-fourths. It's completely new to me. I learned it just a few weeks ago. I meet with a group of people as I talk about my sermon series. It's kind of like a little focus group. And one of the members of that group, John Amundson, said, being ungrateful is like being a Karen. Now, first of all, I want to say, I see a Karen sitting right there. This does not apply to Sister Stamper. It doesn't apply to Sister Crab. And it doesn't apply to you necessarily, unless you are a Karen, this morning. But a Karen is somebody, in terminology today, somebody, typically a woman who, but it can be applied to a man, who feels entitled, who isn't very grateful, who complains a lot, the kind of person who at the restaurant will be the one to send the waiter back and forth and a million times and complain about it and not leave a tip and that sort of thing. So what would you like to be that kind of Karen? I don't think any of us want to be like that. Sometimes rude, unappreciative, feel like we're entitled to something. And I will say this about this video of this woman, whatever her name is, and she was recording herself doing this, think about that. She has got to be the most blessed person on the face of the earth. And why do I say that? At the end of that clip, I don't know if you caught what she said there, but she said, this is the worst experience of my life. And I say to that, she lives a charmed life, doesn't she? Ingratitude. I'm going to be talking about what it means to be a thanksgiver. But I want to begin by saying there is a lot at stake, and this matters for a lot of reasons. It matters because those of us who practice thanksgiving, who practice being thankful and are thankful, studies bear out and show empirically that people who practice gratitude are people, generally speaking, who are happier. It affects their health in a positive way, and it certainly makes life easier, not just for them, but for other people around them. There was a study that was conducted several years ago, and actually there have been several different studies that are like this one, but they took a group of people and then they told that group of people, after they asked them questions about their attitudes and their feelings and just general personality questions, they said that they were going to get instructions. They were not told what those instructions were, but individually then they were given some instructions. So in this controlled study, half of the group was just asked to once a day, take 5 minutes to write something down that they are grateful for. And they were told to be specific about it. They didn't know what everybody else was asked. The other group, they weren't given any specific instructions. They were just told to come back later, and then they would do some more testing with them. And you can probably figure out that that group that came back after practicing gratitude, the study found that even after a couple of weeks, even though some of them may have quit doing this, maybe they just did it for a week, they found that that group that actually took the time to pause and give thanks and recognized things in their lives were much happier. They were more well. They were well adjusted more than the other group, and I'm not surprised at that. Thanksgiving is one thing. Being a thanksgiver is another thing. Being grateful is one thing. Being thankful is a step beyond, in my mind, being grateful, because when you are thankful, there is an object of that thanks. So you can just say, I'm grateful. You're not necessarily directing that at someone or something. When you say, I am thankful, it's implied that you're thankful to someone or something. But when you are a thanksgiver, thanksgiving is a step beyond that. And that's today's big thought. Today's big thought is God calls us not just to be grateful, nor even just to be thankful, but He calls us to be thanksgivers. And in the story this morning, a very familiar story to all of us, I think we see from that some very practical ways how we can be better thanksgivers. A story of the 10 lepers. It's interesting to me that only Luke is the only one of the gospel writers who shares this story. And you know how Luke did it. He did careful research and he talked to people and he heard stories, and he was going to write down those things for people who were interested in knowing more about Jesus. And it's compelling to me that he chooses to write this. None of the others did. Not that it's unimportant, but he felt like this story truly gets at the heart of a lesson that he was wanting to convey, and including this in his body of material about Jesus. And so we know the story. We know that there were 10 lepers. We know that Jesus was traveling, we're told, between Samaria and Galilee. So typically, if one was traveling to Galilee, they would go around Samaria, but apparently in this trip, they were kind of going into the area or close to Samaria in this trip. And these 10 men had the disease of leprosy. Now, that disease can be any number of skin diseases. It's not necessarily the very worst severe form of leprosy that can actually be deadly. So there were different forms of leprosy. But even if it's the form of leprosy where your skin is just deteriorating and scaly and dry and you have sores everywhere, it was a bad, tough situation to be in anytime. But back in this day, you're isolated from others. You know, we've been practicing quarantine and isolation and social distancing. Well, these guys, if you were a leper in this day, you didn't have any choice but to practice social distancing. Because you didn't want to have the risk of giving that disease, or if you're unclean, maybe even if they didn't get that disease, then they would be unclean. So if you were a leper in this day, they typically lived together in colonies, isolated from others, friends, and even family. And if someone was to come close to them and didn't realize they were unclean, they were supposed to call out, unclean. They're living a sad, difficult life. And so when they hear that Jesus is coming, I don't know how they learned about Jesus. Maybe word just got out that he was coming through town. Jesus had done enough miracles that people would have been familiar with who this man was and the things that he did. And they notice now, they cried out from a distance, have mercy on us. Take pity upon us. And Jesus simply says to them, this is what you need to do. You need to go show yourselves to the priest. And that's what they did. It was necessary to go to the priest. If you were healed from a disease like leprosy, they would be the one to kind of pronounce you clean and give the full seal of approval that you could go back into society in a normal way. And as they're going, as they're going, they're healed. And the implication is they are healed in an instant. Can you imagine if you had a severe skin disease and it was removed, and you're living this kind of life, it was removed immediately, would you be thrilled? I would be thrilled, to say the least. But here's the point. Among others, only one of them returned to give thanks. Just one paused, turned around, and went back to Jesus, praising God. And specifically, it says he thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. I think there's a reason that Luke points out that detail. Some of the others may not have been Samaritans in this borderline between Samaria and Galilee. Likely in a leper's colony, they wouldn't care if you were a Jew or a Samaritan. There was a lot of prejudice between the two, but when you have a disease like that, you know, you're together. Just one returned right now, like right now. And Jesus says something to him, your faith has made you well. Another translation there says, your faith has saved you. And that would be a good translation as well. And so, this tells me that there was something in this man related to what he did in actively giving thanks, ascribing it to the power of God, going to Jesus and saying something to him that says something about his faith in a way that the others did not have the same kind of faith. Now, I don't doubt that the other 10 had faith to a degree. You had to have faith to start heading toward a priest to be pronounced clean if you're not clean yet. So there's a certain level of belief in even taking that step. They didn't say, oh, well, nothing's going to happen. Why do I need to do that? I have leprosy. I shouldn't go to the priest. There was a certain level of faith on the part of all of them. But 9 didn't return. 10 went, 1 returned and said thanks. 9 chose not to. Now, let me ask you a question about those 9. Were they grateful? Say, here's the point. Were they grateful? 9 are cleansed. Do you think they're happy that they've been healed of this disease in an instant? I don't have any doubt that they are absolutely thrilled with what's happened. I don't imagine any of the 9 walking down the road, looking at their hands and their feet and their arms and that leprosy being removed, and any of them say, I don't believe this is even teaching about a sense of entitlement, because I don't feel they probably felt entitled to have this cleansing. This is what I think happened for most of them. They probably immediately said, I've got to go to my family. I can hug them again. I can be in their presence. They were so excited. I have absolutely no doubt. They were grateful. And then even on a certain level had a certain amount of faith, but not like this man. So I want to challenge you, and I want to challenge myself right now. Just looking back, what have you left unsaid? I'm thinking specifically left unsaid to others, to people. We come together every week. Some of us are joining us online, but one of the reasons we come together, we have a built-in opportunity to give praise and thanks to God, do we not? That's what we're doing. We're giving thanks to God because we recognize that He is the one, He is the Father of every good and perfect gift. But I want us to think and focus on what we do in thanksgiving in relationship to other people. What have I left unsaid? Think right now in your life, family, friends, co-workers, acquaintances, people maybe you don't know very well, who you need to thank, who you need to give thanks to. So how can we be better thanksgivers? How can you be a better thanksgiver? Okay, that was a fake sneeze. And I just wanted to see if you would say, bless you. And that kind of makes my first point. We need to be timely with our giving of thanks. This man, the Samaritan, he's timely. He doesn't put it off. He doesn't wait. He doesn't say, you know, someday I need to do this. I need to thank Jesus. And then he goes on his way and then he forgets. He does it immediately. Why do we say bless you when somebody sneezes? Actually, I did some research on it, and it goes back to two ideas that some people have. Some people believe that your heart stops for a minute when you sneeze. And then there are others who say the reason people say bless you or God bless you when you sneeze, it goes back to ancient ideas about the belief that maybe when you did that, demons would enter you, and so it was a protection from demons. Whatever the case is, I don't believe either one of those two things. I don't. And so after doing that research, I don't know why I was in this kind of mood, but I sneezed one day and Jeannie said, bless you. And I said, based on my research, I said, this is terrible. I said, Jeannie, you don't have to say bless you every time I sneeze. You don't have to do that. And so she said, okay, I won't. I will never, she said to me, I will never say bless you or God bless you or Gesundheit or scat or whatever you say when you sneeze to you ever again. She wasn't mad. She wasn't angry. Well, she's a little miffed. But, and she's kept her promise. But now, just think about how ridiculous it would be if somebody sneezed, I sneezed, and maybe 10 or 15 minutes go by, and then one of you yells out, God bless you, Grady. You think, man, that's a little late. I think it's a good practice. It's an opportunity for us to say something nice or encouraging to someone, not based on whether they have demons coming into their body or whether their heart stops, which it doesn't. But it's just an opportunity to do something right now. So the first way to be a better thanksgiver is just to be quicker about it, to be timely. The second way to be a better thanksgiver is to be specific. And so when this Samaritan goes back to Jesus, we specifically are told that he gave thanks. I don't know exactly what he said, but it was very clear in what he said to Jesus. I am absolutely sure it was clear what he was thanking him for. That was understood. And so being specific not only helps us, but it helps other people when we give them thanks. So it's one thing to say to your husband, you're a good husband. I'm thankful that you're my husband. But it's another step to say, you know, honey, I appreciate the fact that when it's time to put the kids to bed, you take the time to get them ready, to have a prayer with them, and spend that focused time with the children. Or, I'm thankful for you, my wife. And then That's one thing. I'm grateful for you, but it's quite another thing to say, you know, honey, I really appreciate this, this, or this, or how organized you are, or what you do in managing what goes on in the house, or a whole list of things could be said. I don't know really how many times I've thanked Jeannie for being the good grandmother she is. I mean, she puts me to shame. I love my grandkids. I think I do well by my grandkids. But, buddy, she takes the cake. Remembers every birthday, remembers all those things, buys them gifts, is more in touch with them than I am. And I'm thankful for that. Be specific. Another thing that you can do is be honest. And when I say that, I'm not saying, I'm just saying be genuine in what you say. Let's get back to the Samaritan. Was there any question in anybody's mind that what he was saying was based on just how he genuinely felt? Did anybody have to drag him to Jesus and say thank you to Jesus? Nobody had to do that. Now, though, sometimes with our kids, what do we do? What do we try to teach our kids? Say thank you, right? Say thank you. Say thank you. Say it. Thank you. Do they mean it? Maybe, maybe not. It's important that we don't exaggerate or patronize or manipulate others with our thanks. We were at a restaurant, oh boy, I can't remember how long ago it was, years ago, maybe 5 years. Remember, we were at that restaurant, and we had a waiter who constantly said, when we said thank you, he said, no, thank you. I thought, okay, one time, that's fine. But he'd do something else for us, and we'd say thank you. He said, no, thank you. And so we had a little game going on. We wanted to try to say thank you as many times as we could to see how many times he would say thank you back to us. But he did it every single time. Now, not saying he wasn't sincere. Not saying that. I almost felt like in that situation with that waiter, when he said no, thank you, I felt like saying no, thank you, you know. And maybe it would have ended right there. I'm not sure. So somebody makes you a chicken casserole and you're grateful. Thank them for making that chicken casserole. Now, if you didn't like the chicken casserole, nobody says you have to tell them that you didn't like it. Now, you may be in a tough position for somebody that, well, how'd you like it? So then maybe that's how you have to be creative if you want to be honest. Maybe say the chicken was tender. In the back of your mind, you're thinking it tasted awful, but at least it was tender. Or maybe if the chicken wasn't tender and it tasted terrible, maybe say something, well, the dog loved it. I don't. But he's sincere. He's genuine. He's specific and he's genuine. And here's something else that he does that we often don't think about. He was public in his giving of thanks. Now, I think sometimes the best giving of thanks is done in a small group or one-on-one. You can't beat sitting down with someone or going up to them, looking them in the eye, and thanking them specifically for a way they've blessed your life or something that they've done. But I think of the many, many examples, for example, in the Bible, where when people are thanked, it's done in a public way. Did any of you catch last week when Ken Beaver was speaking in that recorded message? He used the passage from the first chapter of Philippians, and he quoted it, and Paul, in writing to the Philippians, says, I thank my God every time when I think of you. And he expresses his gratitude to them for their partnership in the gospel. He's doing it in a public way. Romans 16, read that chapter this week. And you will see that Paul, over and over again, specifically mentions people, but he doesn't just mention them. He speaks specifically about the things that they are doing and what they did, and he does it in a public way. I think about what was done a few weeks ago when Sheila Smethers stepped down from teaching that cradle roll class that she taught for like 34 years. Sheila here this morning. Where is she? Okay. I don't want to embarrass you, Sheila. Or you have. But that was appropriate. That was appropriate. And a lot of you have done a lot of teaching. And we mentioned Sheila because she's retired, and it was an appropriate thing to do at that time. Jeannie's stepping down herself, although she's going to do some fill-in. It's appropriate to do that. So if you're at a business meeting this week and you lead that business meeting at work or a meeting at work, start that meeting by saying, hey, I want to thank so-and-so for what they've done. Do it in a public way. The fifth thing is to make it permanent. And what I mean by that is I'm not saying that what we speak to others is any less powerful than putting it in a permanent form, like an email or a text or even especially a handwritten note. But there can be great power in doing that. Now, the Samaritan here, he didn't write this down, but somebody paid attention, somebody was there, and it was important enough to speak it and probably speak it over and over and over again until somebody wrote it down, and then Luke and others wrote it down. It was permanent. So I encourage you to do something permanent as you thank people. I have a letter here. I'm not going to read it. But I keep notes and I keep letters that people write to me. I think I told you a while back, if it's a nasty letter, I throw those away. But I don't get too many nasty ones. Written by Howard Sechrist, January 20th, 2005. And I'm just going to read you how he begins this letter. And those of you who knew Howard and Betty, I tell you what, I miss them so much. They were treasures in this church. Betty and I want to thank you both for good food and your visits during my time of silence. Remember, he had surgery, he couldn't speak. That chicken casserole Jeannie made certainly captivated me. I love that. And I guess he could say that Jeannie captivated him in some ways personally. I don't know. Betty was quite taken by it as well. All was good and greatly appreciated. And then he goes on to thank us both for what we do and how we blessed his life. Try to make it permanent. Even something as simple as writing a note to the waiter or the waitress that leaves the bill there, say something and leave that with them if they've served you in a special way. Last but not least, be creative. Be creative in what you do. And I've been talking about some of these ways that we can be creative. There are a host of things we can do, thinking outside the box, that expresses gratitude in ways that will be memorable. And so whether it's doing what Nora's group at work did, they have a bulletin board and they have a gratitude village and they have little houses, and at work they write out things that they are thankful for and then they post it on that board and everybody can go by and share in the thanks that everybody's expressing on that board. They're doing that at work. Why not at the dinner table as you're sitting there with your family? And I'm not just talking Thanksgiving Day, but why not frequently pause and say, listen, I want to thank so-and-so for doing such-and-such. And be specific. Maybe do that once a week. But I want to close by offering this practical step. I really do encourage everybody, let's all join together and try to make the rest of November, and I'm just asking you, the rest of November, let's all practice having a gratitude journal. And I challenge you, every day, write down three things specifically in that journal or that diary or whatever you're writing in, three specific things that you are thankful for. And I want you to reflect on that and pray about that. And I assure you, if you do that and I do that, that it's going to change your attitude. It's going to change how you look at things. Things may be very tough for you right now, and it doesn't make them any less tougher to be grateful. But when we practice that, it's going to make a difference in our perspective. And by all means, if there's someone to thank, be a thanks giver. So this little story really does show us how we can be better thanksgivers. We can do it by being creative and specific and honest and doing it in public if it's suitable, by making it permanent if we can. But I close this morning by saying this: God is the first giver. And as Rick mentioned a few minutes ago in the beginning, we love because He first forgave us, because He first loved us. God's the one who's taken the initiative in our lives. He's the one who pursues you when you wander because He loves you so much. God is the ultimate giver. And so when we take the Lord's Supper in a few minutes, that's an opportunity to be grateful and remember. I want you to know that whatever that need is in your life that we can help you and assist you with, and maybe you are viewing online, applies to you, we want to be here for you. And whether that's exploring what it means to be a Christian or being baptized or whatever it is, we want to be here for you. Let us know. And I want to close by saying thank you. Thank you for being such good listeners this morning. May these words encourage you to be a better thanksgiver.